Welcome to A Lawyer's Guide to the Galaxy, a podcast about geek culture by lawyers with your hosts, Ben Siders and Kirk Damon.
And welcome back to A Lawyer's Guide to the Galaxy, the podcast that asks interesting questions that don't have any answers, with your host, Ben Siders. That's me, and the other guy is Kirk Damon.
That's Kirk, that's the captain of the Enterprise.
We are long absent intellectual property lawyers practicing law in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find me, Ben, on Twitter at Benjamin Siders. You can find Kirk at KirkDMN. And you can find this podcast at LGGpod. Boy, has it been a minute, Kirk.
I think our last episode was last year's version of this episode. Okay, not quite.
Not quite.
Close.
So, for those of you who are rejoining us after our long hiatus, this is going to be the continuation of season 6. We're recording this in January of 2024. Our last published episode was the Warhol episode last summer. We have recorded several other episodes. Some of them will be released, some of them will not. But there is more content coming, and but it was just one of those years. I mean, every time we sit down to... We spent more time talking about episodes we're going to record.
Than we spent recording episodes.
We spent recording. So
we're also contemplating the idea of breaking the podcast
Yeah,
apart.
We should cover that. So we were going to do this in-camera idea of splitting up the legal episodes and the sort of fluff episodes. That did not come to pass. It sounded like a good idea to us at the time. It wound up being logistically a lot more difficult, complex, and expensive than we really thought. So we're not going to do that, although we did record several in-camera episodes. We've got one on The Last of Us. We've got one on Season 2 of the Star Wars anime series. So those will be coming. Those are recorded. And so if you hear us in those episodes talking about how this is an in-camera, we lied. It's not. It's just the main feed.
Yep.
So those are on the way. But today we're going to do our annual kickoff episode that we've done for most of our years, which is talking about the new stuff entering the public domain. And this one is a doozy.
Well, yeah, there's one major item, which I think everybody is talking about entering the public domain.
Yes. I'm surprised there's not more talk about it, actually. I thought we would be inundated with news articles covering it, and I haven't really seen that much. But Steamboat Willie, the first published...
And Playing Crazy.
The first published appearance of Mickey and Minnie Mouse, Minnie often gets overlooked in this thing, was published in 1928, I think it was. So yeah, so fast forward to 95 years later,
yeah,
and here we are. It expires at the end of 2023. And so Steamboat Willie is now in the public domain. If you follow this at all, you've probably seen a lot of people talking about what that means, and a lot of people who don't really know what that means and aren't sure what that means.
So, I think the key thing, I think the best place for it to start with is you universally get asked the question, does this mean Mickey Mouse is in the public domain?
No.
And the answer is definitively no.
Definitely not.
It means Steamboat Willie is in the public domain.
Yes, yeah, Steamboat Willie, that particular work of authorship, as we say in copyright speak, that particular work of authorship is in public domain, and only that one, the one published in 1928.
Okay, two, with this Playing Crazy
yes,
as well.
Yeah.
That means everybody overlooks that one.
If you found a remastered version that was published and released on DVD in 2002, that one is not public domain.
Yeah, so it's. I think the real key thing about this is it's, and this is kind of where we started here. When you talk about things entering the public domain, it doesn't mean that everything that's associated with something enters the public domain. It means that particular work of authorship, that particular work enters the public domain. The most significant reason to sort of be talking about Steamboat Willie is because, obviously, this is a substantial piece
yes.
of authorship,
yes,
a substantial piece of history, you know, that comes out of it. And it's also the start of Disney, which means that at this point in time, we're probably going to have something Disney entering the public domain every year.
Yes.
Because that's just, you know, what we're going to have happen.
It's really interesting with Disney because so many of their keystone properties or keystone works are themselves based on public domain works.
Yeah.
All the Hans Christian Andersen stuff, Frozen, Tangled, Little Mermaid, Cinderella, Snow White, it's all stuff that's been public domain for a long time. So I actually had a lengthy discussion with a friend of mine about this. He's just trying to figure out, what does this mean? Like, what can we do with Steamboat Willie? And the question's not that simple, right? From a copyright perspective, the answer is simple. Anything you want, basically.
Yeah.
But
you can't use Mickey Mouse.
That's the thing. You can use Steamboat Willie as Mickey appears in Steamboat Willie.
Yep.
But, you know, I assume that there's going to be more Mickey Mouse stuff where he looks the same way he looked in Steamboat Willie entering the public domain next year and in 5 years.
One example I saw from it, I think, is something. I believe there is a horror movie coming out.
Yeah, that's the first thing they do is a horror movie.
But it is using the black and white Mickey Mouse as the presentation, the Steamboat Willie one. My understanding is it's even set on the Steamboat. Like, they're really going straight after Steamboat Willie.
You could do like a Heart of Darkness thing with that. You know?
Well, and quite frankly, it's one of these where you look at it and say, you know, hey, is this awful? We're taking these, you know, incredibly beloved Disney characters and making horror movies out of them. But again, like we commented last year, you know, about it talking about Winnie the Pooh. This is good because this is what the public domain is supposed to do. It's saying we're going to have this spur of creativity. Are these going to be great horror movies? I doubt it.
No, probably not.
But they might be. We never know.
It's not a coincidence that the first thing we do with Winnie the Pooh is the most unfamily-friendly thing you can think of. The first thing we're going to do with Mickey Mouse is the same thing here. So, once we get past this ha-ha, look how edgy I am thing that's going to happen with this, we'll see if anything more interesting can be done with these properties.
I think a lot of what you may very well see that might be more interesting behind it is the fact that, you know, they now can't really be suppressed to an audience. You know, they can be, you know, Steamboat Willie itself, again, as long as it's not a remastered version, it's the original, stuff like that, can be published, can be republished. Given the internet, these are things we can potentially see accessed.
And probably most importantly, derivative works. We can make derivative works of those. Now, but that's where it gets tricky, right? Because you can have to make something that's a derivative work of Steamboat Willie, but not of other stuff that's still copyrighted.
Examples of ones I think we may very well start seeing, and again, this may not necessarily be Steamboat Willie, but talking about some of these things later on, adaptations into stage plays. Something you may very well start seeing happening to more films, you know, where an author didn't necessarily write one or wasn't in the author's estate is not necessarily interested in making one, but now with an expiration of copyright, they can put them into different genres. You know, one is I've had with Steamboat Willie, somebody can make it in 3D.
Yeah, why not?
You know, that can be an intriguing sort of, you know, concept.
Make a video game out of it, somebody
could colorize it.
Yeah.
You know, those are things that you potentially could do. Now, you got to be careful with the colors, but having to do with Mickey Mouse. Yeah. But, you know, you can definitely play around a lot with those kind of ideas being derivative works. It's interesting to see where it's going to go. I think the real key, you know, from us as the point of view in talking about this, is it's not a free-for-all on Mickey Mouse. And I think a lot of people are looking at it and saying, oh, this means it's a free-for-all for Mickey Mouse. And that is very wrong.
And Mickey Mouse, setting aside the difference in how Mickey Mouse appears now versus in 1928, there are also trademarks that are in play.
Yeah.
So, although, you know, trademarks are usually, a little easier to work around than copyrights. You know, you can put disclaimers in. You still have tarnishment and things like that. You can't just take Mickey and stick him in a pornographic film.
Yeah.
That's going to cause problems no matter how many disclaimers you put out there. But there still is a broad amount of artistic discretion that can be exercised here with Mickey as he appears in Steamboat Willie. And we're going to just start to see year after year, probably more and more of these Disney works falling into the public domain. Another one, Tigger, is now finally public domain. In fact, I've already seen some webcomics talking about that and making jokes with a strong sexual overtone to them. Of course, there's always these edgelords who think that they're really going to push boundaries and shock the world by doing something.
It's we're all expecting them to do it.
But in a sense, though, like that's the stuff that's the least harmful because it's so over the top. Like, nobody's going to think, oh, did Disney really sanction this? No. Definitely not.
And I think that's, you know, again, The truly interesting space in many respects behind this is we are now getting into, I mean, this has been already happening with the Great Gatsby the last few years. You know, we are seeing massive icons of authorship coming into the public domain now, especially early American. I mean, that's really a lot of what we're seeing behind this. A lot of German film, early German film. These are important works to be seeing entering the public domain because they are so massive. And that's what's kind of nice about it with the idea of Steamboat Willie is, in some sense, you know, Disney was this massive juggernaut that had no expired copyrights. Nothing Disney had done had ever been expired copyright just because of its timing. That is no longer true. We're going to continue to see more. We're going to see more, you know, known properties coming through, you know, losing copyright, becoming public domain. And, you know, that should be a good thing.
You know, one thing that really has struck me as we've done this, I think, for 4 or 5 years now, I took a class on, so in my, with my English degree, you had to take literature and culture classes, which would study either a specific country or a specific era, like literature and culture of England in the 18th century, which I did take, and it was awful. A horrible class. But for my American Lit class, I took literature and culture of America in the 1920s. So we studied a lot of the Harlem Renaissance stuff, a lot of these works. And although just from taking that class, I had an appreciation for just how much of American popular culture was defined by this decade in particular, it really gets driven home here as we look through this list every year and see the names that are on here. I mean, so much of what we take for granted with music, with film, and with novels is, oh, this was the golden era of American creative output.
In many respects, yeah. I mean, you also look and say the modern era is the next golden era.
Yeah, for sure.
Is the only one we're going to be talking about entering the public domain.
During our lifetimes. Okay, let's get to it. We talked about Mickey. We talked about Tigger. Books and plays. So as always, we're referencing the Duke Law School Center for the Study of the Public Domain. This article is by Jennifer Jenkins, and she's kind of going through and documenting what's coming out this year. It's not everything. It's just kind of what they found that they thought was interesting. So let's talk about some of these books and plays. D.H. Lawrence, Lady Chatterley's Lover.
That's obviously a well-known book is what it is. I can't say I've ever read it.
I don't think I have either, but that's one that like it comes up on like Jeopardy. So I know it from that, if nothing else.
Exactly.
We've got Virginia Woolf, Orlando. I've not read that either.
Oh, you skipped the Three Penny Opera, at least.
Oh, yeah, Three Penny German. Opera. Yeah, another German one.
Yep. All Quiet on the Western Front in German. You know, obviously those are sort of both major in the plays, I guess. Well, one's a play originally, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
The other, you know, being a major book, but obviously also just recently had a recent movie interpretation.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is not out of copyright. You know, the movie interpretation stays still under copyright. Covered.
W.E.D. Du Bois, A Dark Princess. I've not read that one, but again, an important African-American author from the 1920s. Claude McKay, Harlem Renaissance again. A.A. Milne, House at Pooh Corner. There is Tigger showing up.
The other big one that seems to get overridden by Mickey Mouse is Peter Pan and the Boy Who Wouldn't Grow Up.
Yes. The note here says the play's script was not published for copyright purposes until 1928, although there is a novel that was published in 1911. So that's another one of those that we have kind of a split copyright on it.
I think the important part of that is particularly the play, because I think most people associate Peter Pan with the play more than the book, Peter and Wendy.
Yeah.
It's intriguing because there's been so much done with Peter Pan. My daughter recently has taken to, if you guys haven't seen it, The Goes Wrong Show, which is a piece of British comedy. It's available on Amazon Broadway, which, by the way, if you guys have not discovered Amazon Broadway, if you have any interest in stage theaters, go find out about Amazon Broadway because it's one of the best values I've encountered as a streaming service. But The Goes Wrong Show does Peter Pan Goes Wrong, which is a presentation of Peter Pan the play, of which, if it can go wrong, it does go wrong very much on purpose. The play is, needless to say, an absolute disaster. They destroy the set. Everything is hilarious. but it's one of those things where, you know, you're looking at this thing going, that's the way people associate Peter Pan. They associate it with a stage play.
Yeah.
Much more so than a book. And so I think it's something where that's a really intriguing one to see come up.
We've got Agatha Christie here, The Mystery of the Blue Train. I've never heard of that
one. I've never heard of it either. But I mean, the major thing there is the fact that we've been mentioning Agatha Christie for a couple of years now. you know, we're getting to Murder on the Orient Express here. That's coming.
And then Robert Frost, West Running Brook. I'm not familiar with that one either. But of course, we all know who Robert Frost is.
Yep.
Okay, moving on to films. We are so last year was The Jazz Singer, I believe, was the big one. We're into the talkies, the initial talkies.
Yeah, but I believe isn't the very last
Playing Crazy. Playing Crazy was the first Mickey film that actually was made before Steamboat Willie, but released after it. But it was a silent film
originally. There is a voice version, I believe.
Yeah, so we got those two. Kirk, what else we got here? Charlie Chaplin, The Circus.
Yep. Yeah, Charlie Chaplin again. Another one we're starting to see in a lot of things coming down. So you know, ends of silent releases. In Old Arizona, the first 100% all talking film. I'm trying to remember what these I remember. The Last Command.
Yeah,
first Academy Award for Best Actor. I remember watching that at one point in time with it.
I've seen this noted too a few times. Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, Disney's last remaining Oswald. I've never seen any of those.
I'm not sure you can see him, to be quite truthful. But
I don't know if you can either. But if you don't know, Oswald was the basis for the Mickey Mouse character and kind of the mascot before they came up with Mickey and said he was a little more marketable.
Yeah, well, and a little bit better character, I think, too. Yeah. But that's good. I mean, I don't think there's a lot in films.
Not a ton of film. Steamboat Willie's kind of the headliner there, and it's going to overshadow basically everything else.
Yeah.
There's a few more that got listed here. The Singing Fool, which is a sequel basically to The Jazz Singer. Mm-hmm. We got a Theodore Dreyer film here. So there's some interesting stuff if you're kind of a film nerd. But we're kind of rapidly moving out of the era that I know much about from the 1920s.
Well, and I think what you're really getting into is, since we're early talkies, there's not a lot of movies that are really known for at this point in time.
Yeah.
What we're going to really start encountering, I think, and I think it's the comment with Last Command is the first Academy Award for Best Actor. We're going to start seeing Academy Award winners start falling here because the Academy Awards are now gaining.
Yeah, you know, I think you'll see like the types of actors we see show up will change a lot too as we move out of the silent film era and see which actors were able to successfully transition into the talkies.
Yep.
All right, music. We are obviously still in the big band and jazz and ragtime era, so there's going to be a lot of that kind of stuff in here. Here's one. I'll let Kirk announce this one.
Mac the Knife.
Mac the Knife.
Which is actually from the Three Penny Opera.
From the Three Penny Opera, yeah.
But yeah, I think it's, you know, that's a song everybody knows.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't heard it, just go listen to it right now.
Again, it is original German lyrics, so it's not quite the song we're used to. There's going to be recordings of it that are still going to be covered, but
you'll recognize it almost immediately. It's very very famous. Making Whoopee, that's a classic one. Want to Be Loved by You, Empty Bed Blues, J.C. Johnson. A lot more blues and jazz here. Not a lot of huge name songs, but a lot of stuff. If you haven't heard of some of these, just go listen to them. If you listen to the first 10 seconds, you'll recognize a lot of these.
Yeah, it definitely is. I should Hold Everything pop up there is presumably one of the songs from it. But I can't see the actual song. I just had it pop up on one of their things with it. And then, but again, that's musical composition. So this is the underlying composition, not any recording of it.
Yeah.
Essentially the sheet music is essentially no longer.
Yes, the way to think about it. So you find like a modern recording someone's done of one of these songs. That does not mean that recording is public domain.
Yep,
it probably is not. It's a good time to mention, too, the lost films, you know, because of the public domain folks like to say it's because of copyright that a lot of these films have not been preserved when they otherwise could have been. I don't know how true that is, but it is a fact that some of these films have been lost forever. Some of these songs have been lost forever because the original copies were lost or degraded. In fact, we talked before that the Star Wars films, when they were going to make the remastered versions in the late 90s, which for you younger people, those are the only versions you know. But Kirk and I grew up with the original VHS copies that we have on Letterboxd now. And when they were pulling that film out, it was degraded significantly. And I remember if you ever watched like the special featurettes before the VHS release of the remastered versions, they talk about how that film, if they hadn't done it then, they may not have ever been able to because it was so badly gone.
Yeah, and a lot of it also is just the sheer technology. Yeah. You know, these are not digitally stored films with no degradation. These are chemical prints, you know, which had a master. And one of the big things you bump into is there's not a lot of copies because those copies had no reason to be preserved and they were bulky, and that's just a lot of the sort of storage behind this. What I do think is interesting about some of the stuff with that is, again, as stuff falls in public domain, you may very well see people who have these things on it potentially come out. I mean, I know as an example, I have, you know, just in my house when my wife got them in an antique sale, I have original Edison cylindrical records, from his, record days and stuff like that. Do they play anymore? I have no idea. They're wax.
Wax cylinders,
I mean, if they've been, exposed to something negative, they're not going to play anymore, and I'm not going to try it. Because I wouldn't want to damage them even if they can, but you kind of wonder like what's on those? Could you preserve it? Could you not preserve it? Even modern stuff is not necessarily being preserved. Like you talk about Star Wars is from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that long ago. This is 1928.
Yeah.
You always have lost films. I don't think a lot of it's copyright. I think much more of it is just sheer technology.
Yeah.
And the fact that nobody cared.
Yeah.
A lot of these films were not commercial successes. They weren't things people necessarily wanted to keep. You didn't have a film studio that wanted to maintain it. You had, fires destroy warehouses. Things happen.
Yeah. You got to kind of think, this is where maybe markets help us figure out what has cultural value and what doesn't. Not that none of the stuff that's lost is not valuable, but you got to think if something really was at least commercially relevant, then it would have been preserved somehow.
Yeah.
If
it stayed that way,
yeah.
I think a lot of the problem we have with it is we've become more interested recently in history, and particularly in sort of history of copyrighted works than we used to be. Particularly when we talk about things like early movies. I don't think people really cared about early movies. It wasn't seen
like
as
we talked about the first Great Gatsby is a lost film.
Yeah.
Which now, of course, we'd love to see what that was, So the fact that it's lost, was it not a commercial success? I have no idea, but you hate to lose that kind of stuff because that one in particular, we've talked about how Great Gatsby was not a well-received novel when it came out even. It only got popular much later after the copyrights were gone.
Well, after his death. I mean, that was the sort of the M. Scott Fitzgerald's death. You know, and again, I think one of the things that's very interesting about it is just how much interest we have in preserving this stuff. It's gotten easier, but there's still stuff lost constantly today.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, how many, you know, we do not have every novelist's novel and the things. I mean, there's plenty of unpublished novels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are probably things in, you know, random people's bookshelves where they have the only copy that still exists.
And they have no idea.
They don't even realize what it is. You know, it may very well get, you know, thrown out in a junk sale.
Didn't they find one of the original copies of the Declaration of Independence that way? Like, it was in somebody's garage or something.
Well,
or somebody's
these are always, you know, copies of this kind of things are always found, like, behind photos, behind paintings, stuff like that. Not just because it's reused, but because that's where somebody stored it and they forgot it was there. You know, people find, you know, results of bank robberies in the walls of their homes, you know, I mean, stuff like that. So, you know, it is, I think, you know, we look at it, we lament it, but part of the reason for that is because it interests us now, because it is 100 years old now, and it's something that does have cultural significance. We only worry about the original Great Gatsby because it's the Great Gatsby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure I can come up with some other novel that was equally as poorly received as the Great Gatsby, which nobody knows even exists.
Yeah.
Because its copies were long gone by 1930,
mm-hmm.
You know, and stuff like that. So,
and nobody cares.
And nobody cares.
Okay, so we got another category this year that we didn't have last year, sound recordings. We should say sound recordings are weird. And we say sound recordings, we mostly mean recorded music, but it covers, you know, other sound recordings as well. They're weird, though, because they were not covered by federal copyright law until 1972. And even then, it was only new stuff after 1972 that was covered, until a couple years ago when they passed the Music Modernization Act and swept in all the old stuff. And just because of how those laws took effect and how they worked, there was no sound recordings that entered the public domain last year. But this year, they're back.
Yeah. So you very well could have had something like these are that had copyright for a year.
Yes. So the only one on here, it's a lot of what you'd expect. Blues, jazz, ragtime, swing. The Charleston is a big one.
The original Charleston recordings. I think it's the original.
Yeah, these would all probably be original. So if you hear a really decent copy of these songs, it's probably not this one. Because if you've ever heard like an original recording from the 1920s, they're really not great.
Well, and again, it's, you know, the technology wasn't there. Remember, we are vinyl records at this point in time at best.
Oh, yeah. No, a lot of these are probably still, what were those big things with the funnels?
Phonographs. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, those are wax, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Is what we're talking about with it. So, I mean, obviously they can melt, you know, very readily. But I think we have vinyl recordings. I'm talking about the invention of plastic.
I'm not sure exactly when that was. I'm sure we'll find out if we go through this some more. So, Charleston, some blues, Downhearted Blues with Bessie Smith.
Well, they've actually got there's a vinyl record showing right now.
Oh, yeah, so that's
it. Presumably it is. Okay.
All right. There you go. Tin Roof Blues, Wolverine Blues, Memphis Five, just a lot. Again, every year is going to be like this, where it's a who's who of jazz and blues artists. You know, take a look at those. These, I'm sure, I'm going to bet we probably haven't heard any of these recordings before.
I mean, you may very well be, probably my guess is you've heard these if you're seriously into blues or jazz.
The originals, though, you think?
People will probably soften out. That'd be my
guess. That's
possible, if you're into this area, you're into these types of music, you probably soften out. You probably specifically listen to them. I mean, almost certainly the major ones of these have probably been remastered.
Yes.
Probably from these original ones. And again, if you've heard it, you probably haven't heard it on its original format. You've heard that converted into a digital format or converted onto, you know, best in a cassette tape.
Yep.
Maybe even repressed into vinyl. But yeah, I think it's one of those where this is going to be something where because of its significance, they've remade it, but it's the original recording because they made it from a master at some point in time previously. How many of the masters still exist? Who knows? Again, a lot of these are probably because some of these artists are substantial artists of the blues era and stuff like that. They have been maintained, I suspect. But I know, like, they talk about, you know, even original music, or even, like, original country music, which we aren't even to yet, you know, originals are gone because they just didn't survive and nobody cared.
We should mention the Library of Congress has a national jukebox. You can go to their website and you can play everything that's in their collection, at least, online in the public domain. In fact, you can download it. If it's in the public domain. And you can also stream the stuff that is not. So they've got quite a collection there, and you can listen to stuff there. So check that out. Just Google Library of Congress National Jukebox. And there's a final note on here. They don't usually cover artwork in this Duke Law School thing, but they do mention an important one, M.C. Escher's Tower of Babel woodcut. It's not Tower of Babel specifically so much as M.C. Escher, because his estate is so litigious.
And his work is incredibly famous.
Yes.
I mean, we all know who M.C. Escher is.
Yeah, so Power of Babel is entering the public domain as well. Although they say here, we did not find definitive copyright information for other notable artwork. So it's interesting that artwork is kind of hard to find that for.
Well, the problem with it is I think a lot of times they don't know the year of publication.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest issue because it's a lot of times these are singular artworks. There aren't copies made or at least not copies made contemporaneously.
But artwork also often winds up in collections where, you know, the movies, the films, the books are all owned by studios and publishers. They're going to renew their copyrights because back then you had to do that. The artwork, you know?
Well, and you have a single copy in somebody's private collection.
Yeah,
does the author even remember?
Yeah, does the author even know? Because a lot of this stuff didn't get famous until much later. So they produced this stuff and just kind of hung out there. So we probably find a lot more artwork fell into the public domain early relative to these other works that have, you know, more enduring quality and a more organized copyright owner keeping track of the rights and renewing them.
Exactly, yeah. And again, the ones that probably are the ones that are very famous and were famous at the time. Because of the fact that they actually were able to get the, you know, they filed for the copyright at the time because it was important to do so, and they aren't more. And again, actually, you just popped up the imagery on it, the fact that there's imagery in Winnie the Pooh. So, you know, that being, you know, some of the stuff that's potentially coming through. Now, that illustrated version, I don't remember when that falls, if that falls, you know, from the thing. I think that actually is for with this.
The original one now. Was the first book had the.
Yeah, but I think there's much more illustration in the second book, which is the one that just fell this year.
Yeah, and we're seeing some of the imagery being used now to make, you know, modern messages and things you arguably may have been able to do before under fair use.
Yeah.
And I've seen I saw one of our listeners, Ed from Grand Rapids, one of our favorites. Ed pointed out to me a webcomic where somebody was making sort of a commentary using the Winnie the Pooh characters, but the artist who did it knows what he's doing, and he was very careful to depict the characters only the way that they were shown in the original A.A. Milne books. You don't see Pooh with like his Disney clothes or the colors, and the way that his face is shaped is different. So you can use this stuff, but you got to be careful. You got to know what you're doing, or you can still step on rights that are still valid.
Yeah, and again, the thing I think is most interesting about this, and I've said this, I think, for the last couple of years as well, what we really are starting to see is, in many respects, icons of literature, icons of film, because they were really, because of what they are, stuff like that, starting to enter the public domain, which is good.
Yeah.
Because we haven't had stuff like this entering the public domain for years. Now, part of it's arguably because of its, you know, iconic nature. But what we're really seeing, you know, happen with it now is every year stuff which is recognizable, which we know about, which is studied in classrooms, entering the public domain. And this is, you know, in my mind, this is a good thing. It does get grant us better use in conjunction with these, and we're seeing it generate substantial new content.
Yeah,
as it enters the public domain. I mean, the system is working in some sense as it's supposed to. Now, is that content, you know, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey?
Yeah.
You know, the equivalent of Winnie the Pooh, probably not.
No, but it's Howard Stern shock jock type stuff. But people will make more serious things out of it. And we're already seeing that happen. That's just not the stuff that makes headlines because it's not shocking.
Yeah. And it's also, as it gets more and more of it happens, you're going to see more and more of it being done.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah. That's all good stuff. What else do we want to talk about? Upcoming episodes. We've got to pivot from public domain briefly. We're going to get the two episodes we've already recorded queued up. Like we said before, we've got one on the new Star Wars anime season.
Vision Season 2.
We got that ready to go. And then we've also talked about
The Last of Us,
yes.
Which I binged on an airplane. So
yes, Kirk was very passionate about that one. And then we've also both seen Andor. And have you seen Ahsoka yet?
Seen Ahsoka, yeah. The only thing I've not finished is Mandalorian Season 3. And it's because none of my family wants to watch it.
Well, you need to see it. There's some good stuff in there. So we've got plenty of Star Wars stuff to talk about. We've got a lot of that sort of fluff content coming. And we also have quite a few other episodes to go through. There's a lot going on with AI. We actually recorded an AI episode that something went wrong with my phone and it's unintelligible. But we're going to do probably a couple episodes, I would guess, on different issues with AI because there's a lot of things going on there. And just other things as they happen. We've got the Chapel Warner case that is interesting. That's sort of an inside baseball thing, but it is relevant to how we calculate damages and how you figure out what the risk is of doing this stuff.
As doing this as well, there may be a few other smaller cases. There's some intriguing stuff right now on its way to the federal circuit on patent law, which we may talk about depending on what they say. If they do, depending on what happens in the appeals, what the decisions look like, stuff like that. We may talk about, again, inside baseball, very esoteric areas of patent law. But we have heard definitely from our listeners that they kind of like some of those episodes.
Yeah.
So we may go into a few, you know, very like hyper technical areas of patent practice just because people may be interested in them.
Likewise, on the copyright side, it kind of helps to kind of walk through an example of, you know, what happens when, let's say, Disney re-releases Steamboat Willie or just includes the character in a new DVD they released this year. What does that mean for what you can do with the old one?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So we'll have to see where it goes. Hopefully we will actually be recording episodes this year. We have planned it. We are, you know, trying to schedule stuff out. I made no promises.
We put a meeting on the calendar for Friday, and I already missed the first one, so we're not off to a great start.
But we're doing it now, so we're getting it done. But yeah, we'll see where it goes, and we'll see sort of what the next few months hold.
All right, well, stick with us. We promise you will get more content this year. I realize it's a low hurdle to clear, but my golly, we're going to clear
halfway
it.
There.
All right, that's all for this time. We'll see you next time, Lauren. Play us out.
The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Lewis Rice LLC, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer. This podcast was produced and recorded in St. Louis, Missouri.